1. Begin transmission.
Hello, and once again, welcome to the daily meeting of the Dubious Goals Committee. I'm your chairman. My name is Tobe, and you're listening to Anon Radio. What have we got on the agenda today? Just a couple of simple things. The first thing is, I would just like to make the announcement that I've had three different kinds of tea today already. Not that that's, you know, particularly special or anything. It's just I didn't set out to drink different types of tea. It's just different types of tea have managed to present themselves to me. There's a big difference. The second thing on the agenda, which may or may not have any more or less importance, is the fact that we are now, that's right kids, starting today, we are on whole watch. That's right. You know, we might even have to make this into a special feature. We'll see how I feel about it later. But yes, we are on whole watch. Now, I bet you're probably asking either yourself or me, what is whole watch? Well, whole watch is watching a hole. And that's what we're doing. We're going to watch a hole. Or maybe we should call this hollow street watch. I don't know. Well, let me explain. Okay, we don't even know where to start. I live in a house. It's on a slight hill, and the street is very curvy. And for whatever reason, actually, I know the reason is erosion, my street is hollow. I don't know what the problem is exactly, but the way the water, when it rains or when snow melts, runs down my street, somehow on the other side of the street, it's getting under the street and it's washing the dirt away under the concrete. And so we end up with these hollows or this emptiness below the street in front of my house and up a couple dozen yards up the street. How do I know this? Because ever since I moved in here, every once in a while, a hole forms. The best hole ever was a couple years ago when a mail truck, you know, one of those little tiny mail vans, in some countries they're called floats, a mail float, fell through the street. The mail carrier parked it, got out and was doing his or her rounds, and it fell through the street. Now, I realize that sounds dramatic, but it really wasn't. It wasn't like a giant sinkhole opened up and swallowed up the mail float and a bunch of stuff. No, just the weight of the van itself broke the concrete, and so the two wheels closest to the curb broke through, and so it was just sort of resting on its frame, and it was a big deal. And this is not the first time this has happened. These holes form every couple years, and last year, when some... sometimes they repave, but they don't fix the problem. They only treat the symptoms. And this past summer, and spring for that matter, they decided, oh, we'll go around and we'll just throw asphalt into some of these spots. And that does nothing, because as soon as the winter weather starts, like it has, then the asphalt does no good. It comes off and falls apart, water gets into the cracks, water freezes, and suddenly we have big problems again. And out in front of my house, in two different spots, we have big problems. Okay, so now that we've had some winter weather and it has frozen overnight, we've got a couple spots right in front of my house that are starting to sink. Now, there's one spot just downhill from my driveway on my side of the street where the entire slab is starting to tip, and it's tipping up on one corner and it's dipping down in another corner. And then there's a hole starting right outside the front of my house. It's pretty awesome, and it's sinking rapidly. I mean, I'm seeing changes in this hole daily. And it's dipping down, and they've tried to, over the summer, they tried to fix it by putting in some asphalt, but, you know, that does no good whatsoever. And I hate to say it, but every time I have to go anywhere or come home from anywhere, I make sure to drive over these spots to try to make them worse, because I think it's funny when there's holes in the street. I like it when it happens. Then they have to come, they have to tear out an entire slab or two of concrete, and then there's these giant caves underneath the street. It's pretty cool. And raccoons like to get down in there and play around, and I like to get down there and play around myself. But what they never do is they never bother to fill these holes in or stop the water or do anything. They just, you know, put in a little bit of filler stuff and then pour concrete right over it. And then, you know, 2 or 3 years later, the same problem happens again. The only way they're going to be able to fix this is if they put in a storm drain on that side of the street. It's going to have to run an entire block. And I can see why they don't want to do it, because, you know, they're going to have to rip up pretty much the entire street or sidewalks for an entire block, drop everything in. Well, they're not going to do it now that it's winter. Oh boy. So, we are on hole watch. We are watching for holes outside of my house. And so, over the next coming weeks, over this winter, you'll be hearing me mention the progress of these holes and how they're doing. The best part is I'm not even going to have to really contribute. I don't really necessarily have to drive over these spots, because they're already in perfect spots to be driven over. And my street does get some occasional heavy traffic. And when I say heavy traffic, I mean there is a bus that goes by twice a day. There's a couple of trucks that go by very, very early in the morning. There's a school about half a mile away on my street, and these trucks take supplies and trash away from the school. So, yeah, you can hear them when they're driving by, just when they hit that hole in the middle. It's hilarious. And now I'm just wondering if this one, and they do that when they're going downhill. They won't hit that spot going uphill, but if the slab by my driveway collapses, then they'll have to avoid that and drive in the middle of the street more, and they will hit the center of the other hole as they're driving uphill. So, boy, it can't be long. This is going to break through pretty quickly. We're going to be able to see dirt and all kinds of fun underground stuff. The caves beneath my street. Maybe I should build some kind of like secret lair. The biggest contributor to these holes, though, will be the freeze cycles, because that's what makes the whole problem to begin with. Water gets in the cracks, it freezes, and as it freezes, it expands, because you can't compress water. That's why we have the laws of hydraulics, kids. And so when the water freezes, it pushes, and it is stronger than concrete. And it cracks the concrete, makes bigger cracks, more water gets into it, cracks get bigger and bigger, blah, blah, blah. Things start to break, dirt starts to erode, and that's how you get caves underneath my street. Oh, it's so fun. Makes me laugh just thinking about it. Yeah, it's getting to be winter around here, and that's kind of annoying because it gets super cold, but I'm kind of used to it. The most annoying part about it is now I have to spend all day indoors, and it makes me a little bit crazy. But that just allows me to have more time indoors for my indoor hobbies. And you might be asking yourself, Tobe, what are your indoor hobbies? Well, you've heard this show long enough to know that I've probably, can I talk today? Just barely. What was I talking about? Yes, if you've listened to this show long enough, you know by now that I am some kind of miniatures wargamer. And if you don't understand what this means, or if you don't know, basically what this means is I put army men on a little table and I play games and they shoot at each other and pew pew pew, and they have little battles. So that's what I do. One large aspect of this little hobby is that you have to make terrain for these guys to fight in, on, or around. You know, just having a bunch of little army men on a table is kind of boring. So you make some trees, and you make some houses or some buildings, and you make some roads and some fences, and maybe some bushes or whatever. You can make hills and valleys and rivers, and you make anything you want. And then you put this on your table, and then you put all your little guys on it, and then you have fights. So, yeah, I spend a lot of time making terrain. And I have an interesting take on it only because I'm very cheap. And I don't like to spend a lot of money, so I'm not going to spend a few hundred dollars making a bunch of trees when I can make them for $5, etc. So, one thing that we always need, well, not always, but one thing that people often want are fields. Like, you know, you're going to have a big field of crops, like a big wheat field or a big corn field or any of these things. And so, you got to make some of those. Well, if you don't know how to make some of those, you ask somebody who does. And I am one of those guys who knows how to make it. And I am a moderator on a website about making terrain for wargaming. Or making any kind of terrain, you know, for dollhouses or for model railroad layouts. It doesn't really matter. We're making terrain. And today somebody on the forum asked, hey, how do I make a field that's not boring? And by boring, he meant the traditional way of making fields, which is usually you take a welcome mat and you cut it or shave it, or you take a big piece of artificial fur, you cut it, paint it, shave it, and do all these things. And you can make these things that look like fields. But this person is not looking for that technique. He's kind of tired of it, so I just happen to know another technique. And so today, I made a cornfield. At this time of year, you can buy these little, I guess you call them garlands. And they're more like pipe cleaners, but if you can imagine a short, foot-long, little pine-looking garland that is wire, like a chenille stem, except it's made out of vinyl. You can trim these down and then cut them in like 1-inch or half-inch lengths, and they look like corn stalks. And so I did precisely that. I bought a couple packs of these things for just $2 or $3 a piece. I trimmed some of them down with the scissors, then cut them to length. Then I stuck them one by one, sticking straight up into a little piece of foam that I painted brown so it would look like the ground. And now I have a cornfield. And it's awesome. And so I've got that on my War of Independence table, my American War of Independence table. Yes, I have a table in my war room. It's 4 feet by 4 feet, and it's covered with little Revolutionary War guys that shoot their muskets and cannons at each other. Pew, 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 pew. And now they have a cornfield to fight in or around, whichever they feel like doing. So I guess I might have to make some more cornfields. But then, I took a picture of my cornfield and a picture of the product that I used, and I put it on the website and I explained to the guy, hey, here's a good, cheap way to make a miniature cornfield in approximately 1/72nd scale, which is my favorite scale because it's a cheap scale. And I'm a cheap person. Who am I? My name is Tobe. I am the president and chairman of the Dubious Goals Committee, the daily meeting of which you're listening to right now, right here, on Anon Radio. It's time to listen to some music and some weird stuff, so put your ears on, listen to this.
I hate you all so much.
No one cares, Figgis. You're only invited to round out the numbers.
Oh, you know I am just killing time until my football highlights shows come on tonight. You know that. Who am I, you ask? My name's Tobe, and I'm chairing this committee. This committee of such dubious goals. You're listening to Anon Radio, and you might be wondering what's next. I know I am. I got a big cup of tea. But I'm going to have to make more soon. It's so delicious. Oh, now I'm bored. What do I feel like doing? I guess I should probably do the rest of this show. When I am bored like this, and when I get housebound because the weather's too cold or too hot for that matter, that's when I get out my hobbies. That's when I spend more time in the war room. You hear me talk about the war room on this show quite often. And I'm going to have to do some shows from the war room pretty soon because I'm bored. And there's nothing to talk about. But if I was up in my war room, I could tell you all about the stuff going on all of the little tables that are up there. Should we go up there right now? Nah. I'm going to have to take some pictures anyway. Plus, I think I need to move one of the little tables. I got to put something away. Do I need bigger rooms? Oh, no, I do not. The worst part about being in the war room is that the kitty wants to get in there all the time. Because if I'm in a room, then the cat wants to be in the same room. And the problem with the cat being in the war room is that she likes to play you know, 50-foot kitty. And since at 1/72nd scale, she's approximately, you know, 170 feet tall, she likes to walk around on all my tables and knock over all the dudes and eat the trees and knock the tables off the table. I mean, knock the houses and buildings off the table and knock the fences over and tear up the roads because giant kitty is no match for a bunch of rebellious American colonists.
Well, Tobe, why don't you just make up a game that incorporates your cat?
Well, that's not the point exactly. My cat actually destroys this stuff, and so even if I was playing a game with the cat, I wouldn't be able to play it more than two or three times because all the pieces would be broken or eaten, or they would have kitty slobber all over them. And the last time the cat was up there, I was cleaning some stuff up, four or five days ago. Cat got in there, got on top of the revolution table. She knocked the British subaltern off the table onto the floor. She jumped down onto the floor, picked up the subaltern in her mouth, and took off out of the room. I had to go running after her, run down the stairs. Then she thought this was the fun chase game. Yay, we love to play the chase game. And I chased her all over the house until I realized she no longer had the thing in her mouth. Poor subaltern got lost somewhere in my house. Then I had to backtrace where we were and all the places we were chasing the cat. And finally, I found the subaltern over there by the bucket that she uses to sit on when she wants to watch the raccoons and the possums on the deck. So I got him, returned him to his platoon or whatever he's in charge of. It's about a dozen guys. And everything is back to normal. He suffered no damage. I didn't even have to repaint him. But I do invent games to play with my cat. These mostly involve rolling dice of some kind. Usually I'll be sitting on the floor rolling some dice and the cat has to be involved because, oh look, little things that make noise are rolling around on the floor. Oh, I got to play too. So what you do is you stack some dice up so they're a stack about three or four dice tall, and then the cat knocks them over, and then that's the kitty's roll. So if you're playing with dice with letters on it, you stack up some letter dice, and if the cat knocks the dice over and they spell a word, then kitties get points. And then it's your turn, and then you roll the dice, and then you have to be careful because when you think, just right when you think, oh, I didn't spell a word, then the cat will hit one of the dice and it will roll over to something else and you lose. And that's how you play kitty dice games. Kitty craps is even more difficult because if the cat rolls, you know, a 2 or a 12, she tends to keep hitting the dice so a more beneficial number comes up, and that's why they don't let cats into casinos. But now that I mention it, that might be a real fun way to get kicked out of a casino. Smuggle a cat in, go up to the craps table, you know, buy in for a couple hundred bucks, and in the middle of the game, take the cat out of your coat, throw her onto into the craps table, and scream, "Kitty craps!" and let the dice flow. That they probably wouldn't like that very much, but I think that'd be funner than hell. You know what else would be fun? Kitty roulette! Can you imagine a cat chasing that little ball around on the roulette wheel? That would be awesome! Geez, now I'm really tempted to do this. I wonder if I can get arrested with my cat. Oh, yeah, we're going to have to find out. You know where another fun place to take my cat would be? Any yarn store. Anywhere they sell string in bulk quantities and different types. Just let my cat loose in there and scream, "Kitty spaghetti!" Oh, it would be kitty anarchy. All the crazy old ladies who want to knit probably see my cat and go, "Oh, what a beautiful kitty!" My cat's trying to gulp down yarn by the yard. Because my cat will swallow string. And that's why all lengths of string and rope around my house are tied in a loop so she can't find the end and start swallowing it. And I learned this one time when she was a kitten. I had a piece of string. It was probably a foot or a foot and a half long. Call it 30 to 40 centimeters or thereabouts. And I was sort of watching TV and I wasn't paying any attention. I was just dangling it in front of her and stuff. And she was playing with it and biting it. And I wasn't paying attention. The next thing I know, the string seemed a lot shorter than it should be. And I noticed that it was in her, the other end of it was in her mouth. And I started pulling on it. And I swear to God, she had swallowed about 9 inches of it. What's that in metric? About, call it 15 centimeters. That's more about 6 inches. About 20 centimeters. Oh, it was hilarious. And once I realized what was going on, I was pulling very slowly because that can be dangerous. That's how I learned never to do that again. And I started tying all the strings into loops. And she thinks it's very fun to play with loops of string, trying to bite them. And she looks for the end so she can start swallowing it. You know, that's what I think the next thing I'll do is I think I'll make a Mobius strip out of a piece of paper. And she'll never find the end of that. And she'll only be able to chew on one side. And she'll only be able to chew on one edge of it. Just by its own nature. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm afraid we've run out of time, so I can't explain it to you. Go ahead and Google Mobius Strip. My name is Tobe. You've been listening to the daily meeting of the Dubious Goals Committee right here on Anon Radio. My time is up. It's almost 20 o'clock, so it's time for me to get out of here. I need to make tea, do my stuff, and get ready to watch football highlights on TV. So I'm gone. Bye, 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 bye.
This is the end of the line for me. The end of the line, yes.